Ghostbusters, what do you want?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
You have been a participant in the biggest interdimensional cross rip since the Tunguska blast of 1909.
Felt great.
And one thing, actually, the bird in the background kind of reminded me of a part of the book here where you're talking about animal spirits. Mm-hmm. And the lady that you reference in the book, who I think she wrote a book or something, and she's into that scene, the animal spirit scene,
right.
Has her dog passed away, and she has a parrot, and the parrot, like, says something when the dog's around. We need to get someone who – that should be the next big thing here for ghost hunting. I'm making a suggestion now. So all the ghost hunters out there, get yourself a parrot, teach it to talk, and then use that as a tool on a ghost hunt. That is my new suggestion.
You know, that's probably not too far off from some of the things that people are out there using anyway.
So. Yeah, at least that way you could be like, dude, do you see anything? And then the parrot might be like, yeah, there's this or whatever, you know. It could be
right.
Something cool to use.
Absolutely objective parrot. I do know a group that brings their dogs, and they say, oh, yeah, the dogs get jumpy when there's ghosts around.
Exactly,
so.
But we need someone who can communicate that, so we
right.
need a parrot. That's
right.
The thing. I'm throwing that out there, ghost hunters. I'm making a challenge to you. I want to see a parrot
idea.
In use. Yeah, that'll help the mainstream.
Yeah, no, we'll get acceptance now.
Yeah, totally. and the cool part about Ghost Files is that it's a little bit collaborative. There's a lot of stuff in there from the folks on your website and stuff like that. I guess
right.
just talk a little bit about the collaborative nature of the book, The Ghost Files, and sort of how you got some of the contributions from the people on your site.
Well, I wanted to, you know, kind of tackle different subjects, because the point I wanted to make with the book is that it's not just ghosts and haunted places. You know, look at all the things that shoot off from here. We got to take folklore into account, because why did we hear about some places being haunted and not others? And if there are ghosts, you know, and spirits, maybe there can be animals. And if they're out there, can we communicate with them? Are we psychic? How do we do the investigation? All these kinds of things. And over the years, so many people have been contributing their own experiences, their own accounts. You know, I'm just one person with my own limited experience, but, you know, all these other people have had such rich, profound encounters that I wanted to include them to kind of illustrate some of the points that I was making. So a lot of it just came down to this is stuff I read every day because it's my website. This is stuff that's coming in from all over the world, and it forces me almost daily to kind of rethink what I know or what I think about the subject, you know, because something new always comes in where I just say, wow, you know, I really didn't consider that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know everything. It's just me. But when you start to get a group of people all kind of weighing in on the topic, it gets interesting, and you start to think of things you didn't before. So that's what I wanted to bring to the book, because that's exactly what the website's about. It's about saying, hey, the skeptics may be right, and the religious guy may be right. We may all be doomed to hell, you know? And the scientific guy that's saying, no, there are ghosts, and it's a fluctuation in the electromagnetic field, he may be right. Somewhere in the middle is probably what's really correct, but, you know, we're not going to get there unless we explore all this stuff.
Absolutely. And just to sort of like wrap up the Ghost Files discussion, where can folks get – I have more stuff to talk to you about. I have a couple big picture big picture ghost stuff I want to deal with. But where can folks get Ghost Files? I've seen it. It's got great distribution. Most of your books do. I see them at Barnes & Noble like all the time. But where can folks find Ghost Files? Where can they pick it up?
Yeah, you can get it through Amazon, through your favorite online retailers. Barnes & Noble, as you said, they've always been really good to me. Borders, or your favorite local bookstore.
Nice. There you go. Ghost Files from New Page Books. Definitely check it out. Fun book. Great read. And now I want to get into a couple of the big picture issues here in the world of ghost hunting. And we kind of touched on the first one, and that is the explosion of ghost hunting in popularity. It's insane. As someone from the outside looking in, it's been fascinating to see this explosion in popularity. For starters, I guess, just talk a little bit about your perspective on this explosion of ghost hunting popularity, especially from someone who's been in the field for a long time. You were here before all these Johnny-come-latelys. So what's your perspective on you know, you're like, you know, the guy who's been following the garage band here that all of a sudden has a major record label and a number one hit, and you're like, wow, this is bizarre. They've made quite a leap. So I don't know, talk a little bit about how you've seen the explosion progress from your point of view.
Well, I'm not surprised, first of all. I there's a lot of things that feed that. And, you know, years ago, back in the 90s, there were paranormal investigative groups. They just didn't have TV shows and stuff like that. So, and they were much fewer and further between. But I did notice, and this is something that I have noticed through all of them, which is why my group is so exclusive and than good. There's so much ego with these groups that often what I found is wherever you find one paranormal group, soon there will be two.
Yeah.
And two will beget four. And four turns to eight. Because what happens is there's people in the groups, they start getting into personality clashes, ego clashes. Well, I'm a better ghost hunter. I know how this stuff works. I'm starting my own group. Hey, you want to come with me? Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
And then those two people fight, and then they start their own groups. And then, of course, some people start to get television shows, and it turns into pop culture, propagating the idea to all kinds of other people who may not have ever thought of it before, and it's just exploding everywhere. First of all, I think it's a great thing. What the heck? I mean, you can sit around and drink beer all weekend, like I do, or you can go out and go ghost hunting, like I also do. You know, it's a way to get out of the house. It's a way to do something that's really interesting and off the beaten path. It's a historical research. It's esoteric research. It's a spiritual quest. And for lots of groups, it's a very social thing. You know, some of these groups that go out on weekends, I've realized it's just a social group. That's what it is. They're not, and I actually appreciate the ones that accept that. They're like, hey, we're just a ghost adventuring group. You know, we're not out to get book deals or TV shows or anything like that. This is just what we do on weekends. Nothing wrong with that. That's great. And then I recognize there are people that are really trying to do something different and make contributions to the field. That's great too. And then there's the guys with TV shows, you know, that, you know, it's good to know someone's making money off this. You know, why not? There's something for everybody. And if that keeps, and all that contributes to the ultimate discussion, which is good. You know, I mean, the more we can discuss it on podcasts and websites and television shows, the less weird it becomes. And actually, maybe somewhere in our lifetime, possibly, if it continues to get so popular, maybe we'll get some, like, real funding to do some serious research instead of just people running around on weekends in cemeteries, you know?
Yeah. Like you said, there's pros and cons to the whole thing. Obviously, the pro being that, you know, like the old expression goes, you know, a high tide lifts all boats, I guess you could say. It's good for everybody in a sense where the popularity grows. There's also sort of that downside that I've heard from a lot of people, just things become a fad, and now you get a lot of amateurs in there, and they're kind of sullying the field. And a lot of them don't. And we had Brad Steiger on the show, and he sort of expressed this point of view, and I'm in total agreement with him. And when I heard it, I was like, finally, someone crystallized the point of view I have. Is that, you know, they don't know the history of the field. And like, even from your book, you well pointed out that when you first got into it, then you started reading, like, every book you could, and you met these folks and stuff like that. You did the legwork, and I don't like to use the expression paid your dues, but you did. And a lot of people sort of are jumping into this without doing that. Like, you know, they see ghost hunters, they go out and get an EMF reader, and now they're, you know, the podunk ghost patrol.
That's right.
So,
I've been out with that group. They're very professional, I'll have you know.
Yeah, the PGP.
Right.
Yes, I've heard quite a bit about them. But talk a little bit about, I guess, the downside of the popularity in the sense that, you know, there are some downsides to this.
Yeah, there is. You're right. There are people that picked up an EMF meter last weekend, and this weekend they're trying to get a TV show, and they're trying to get book deals and all this other stuff and be just another ghost hunter. Well, the world doesn't need just another ghost hunter. If you've got new ideas, bring them, you know, but you're not going to get new ideas until you've looked at all the old ones and until you realize that some of the stuff you're rehashing, you know, you're just rehashing from Brad Steiger, really, or Hans Holzer, or guys that did this, you know, 40 years ago. You know, absolutely. Brad's a gem. Brad is really a treasure, you know, and he knows his stuff. Yeah, that is one of the problems, is that I have no problem with paranormal adventuring groups, people that do this socially or just for fun or whatever, but you're right. Once they start to get media attention, and they will, because around October, every local paper is going to be looking to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
And it's probably why I end up doing so much media in October, because I know if I don't do it, someone way less qualified will, who hasn't, you know, been asked all the same questions 100 times and finally has good answers for each of them, you know?
Yeah.
Someone who's going to just go, well, I don't know, you know, the EMF meter goes off and there's a ghost. No, that's not necessarily true. We don't know that at all, you know?
Yeah.
Stop it. You're right. It makes us, the problem is that, you know, the few can make us all look foolish. And it's always been that way. It always will be that way. There will always be some schmucks out there. Even when it's small, there will be some really loud schmucks. So all you can do is just, you know, that's why I don't belong to any group, because then I'm never in any danger of someone in the group making me look stupid,
yeah.
except me. You know, I leave that to myself. you know, I do my thing, and I collaborate with as many people as possible when it makes sense, you know, because I really think that lots of people have contributions to make. And when you start to see someone that's really making everybody look foolish, all you can do is ignore them, you know, just hope that the cream will rise to the top, and everything else will just kind of get buried.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like the old expression also, you know, you're only as good as your weakest link. And when the explosion of popularity happens, then you get a lot more weak links.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And you know, I know, I mean, it's like that in the UFO field, too.
Absolutely.
There's people that are just make everybody look foolish, and there's others, like Brad Steiger, that make everybody look really well thought and interesting. And,
yeah.
And then there's everything in between, too.
Yeah, and the struggle is, in all these fields, is that they're, because it's so off the beaten path of the mainstream, that there's really no way of, like, policing the field. You just, everyone's sort of, it's wild and woolly, and everyone who wants to be a ghost investigator can, everyone wants to be a ufologist, as long as they tag it on their name, and there's no way of being like, no, dear, you're not sanctioned by the American Ufology Association or anything like that.
Yeah, right. That's one of the problems with them. I've always compared it to, you know, the way you become a ghost hunter is pretty similar to the way you become a freelance writer. You just wake up one morning and you say, I'm a freelance writer.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same way you become a ghost hunter. There is no certification. There's no nothing. You just wake up and you say you are one. And some people have been doing it for decades and some have been doing it for days. And unfortunately, the public may not know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Which is too bad. But, hey, maybe if it keeps getting more popular and more television shows, not that television is real, but, you know, at least it's promoting kind of how it works out there.
I thought Lost was a documentary.
Right. You know, honestly, the only television I watch is New England Patriots football and occasionally The Simpsons. But if it's anything else, I haven't seen it.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't have time. I've watched some shows and I just go, oy, and turn it off and just get back to writing.
There you go. Where do you see, like, the popularity of ghost hunting going? Because I'm seeing it peaking right now with a lot of shows, and I feel like it's heading towards the peak, and we're getting very close now to, I think, by the end of the year or by this time next year, we're going to be on the downslope. There's going to be some oversaturation.
Yeah, no, I agree. The public can only stay interested in one topic for so long. I mean, the mass public, you know. Eventually, every network practically does have some kind of paranormal content now.
Yeah.
And the public will just overdose on it, and it'll go away. But something else that's been cyclical is, I'm sure you've seen it. In the 80s, UFOs were kind of big.
Totally.
And ghosts, not so much. And then, like, in the late 90s, the ghost thing started getting big, and UFOs kind of went away.
Mm-hmm.
UFOs, I think, are heating up again.
Yeah.
You know, they're starting to make the news more. They're starting to get TV shows again. And these things are cyclical. And then those will go away, and it'll be Bigfoot. And then ghosts will come back again. And one of the things I've noticed, too, with the interest in ghosts, this goes back to, like, the mid-1800s. Every time there's great turmoil in the world, people get spiritual and start looking at spirit communication, psychics, and ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in the 1860s with the U.S. Civil War. It launched a huge boon for the spiritualist movement. So many people were dying in an untimely way, and so many families were left asking questions. They sought out spiritualists. I need to talk to my dead, you know, brother who died, you know, fighting for the war. It happened again in World War I, happened again in World War II, happened again in Vietnam. Every time that the world's in turmoil, there's a spike in interest in this stuff. And when's the last time it happened? 2001.
Yep.
September 11th, you know, we're at war with everybody now, and I think that was part of the, not only were we due in the natural cycle of things, I think that was kind of the catalyst that made people start going, wait a minute, what does it all mean, you know?
Totally.
What does it all mean? And those questions lead people to church, and it leads them to asking other kinds of questions that maybe they can only find in a haunted building.
Absolutely. To sort of stay on the theme here of this ghost hunting phenomenon right now, when the bubble bursts on ghost hunting, you know, where do you see the field being when that happens? So obviously, as the popularity is so huge right now, a lot of people are going to bail when this isn't the hot thing to do anymore. The good part about these cycles is that when you get a big wave like this, some of them are going to stay.
And, yeah,
you know,
that's right.
That's what you hope for. That's, you know, that's the salvation of the field, really, is every time there's a big cycle, you pick up the new people that are going to be carrying the field into the future. But it also really does a number on, I guess you could say, like, the economy of the ghost hunting field. And from my perspective, in the UFO field, we've seen it post 9/11. 9/11 really put UFOs off the map until, like, this past year.
Right.
And it hurt the field. A lot of magazines went under. A lot of groups just lost tons of members. You know, UFO conventions kind of went out the window. We've seen it really do a number on the economy of the UFO field. Do you think that sort of thing is going to happen with ghost hunting? When the popularity goes down, how do you think the field is going to, you know, readjust to that new world?
Well, the good news is it never goes away, right? Interest in UFOs never extinguished. It just got down to the hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some beauty in that, too. So on the one hand, I'm looking forward to it, you know,
yeah.
Like because then it'll just be the hardcore like it was before, you know, like it was when I started. It'll it'll come back again. So that's the good news. One of the things I've also noticed, and this, you know, 5 years ago, you know, you could only be interested in ghosts. If you brought up anything else, you were a fruitcake. You know, if you said, well, we cover ghosts and Bigfoot, they'd be like, you're nuts, you know, or ghosts and UFOs. Today, I'm seeing a lot of paranormal groups starting to diversify. We don't just cover ghosts. We cover UFOs and Bigfoot and everything else. And part of me wonders, like, do you sense the end coming and you're diversifying your portfolio now? so that when it does turn to UFOs, you can say, well, we've been doing that for years.
Yeah.
Maybe, and I think some of them are. And you know, you could argue the right or wrong of it. I mean, whatever. You know, there are multiple weird phenomena going on. We know that in Massachusetts, right? We've got the Bridgewater Triangle.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's nothing in there that's missing. You know, you got Bigfoot and ghosts and UFOs and cryptids and, you know, Chris Balzano's in there, too. He's definitely, you know, paranormal. So, you know, it's all in there. And why not? Why not study it all?
Yeah. The neat thing for me, because I do like infighting, the neat thing for me about the ghost hunting field is much like Bigfoot, flesh and blood versus paranormal feud and Bigfoot debate. There's kind of that sort of debate, I guess you could say, in ghost hunting, spiritualism versus science, you know, which way is the proper way to hunt for ghosts or study for ghosts. I guess just talk a little bit about that overarching debate that goes on in the ghost hunting field.
Yeah, well, I mean, spiritualism versus science, first of all, no one out there is using purely one or the other. No one. No one on TV, no group. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, when you break out your EMF meter and think you're being a scientist, you know, you're not. you're channeling is what you're doing. You're trying to. You may not even realize it. And again, that's one of the things that's so interesting to me. I've seen groups, some groups are out there saying, you know, we don't use psychics, we don't use any of that stuff, no dowsing rods. Others say, yeah, that's all we use. I know a group of witches that go out there and they use witchcraft for ghost hunting, you know, very esoteric means. Mm-hmm. I even know of three groups now, three of them, that are evangelical Christians using ghost hunting as a way to get people into the flock. You know, someone calls them and says, we have a ghost, and they come in with their Bibles and they try to get them to church and all this other stuff. And I'm like, I mean, I don't agree with that at all. But at the same time, it's just I'm just reporting what's out there.
Yeah.
So you know, God, it's all over the place. I don't know what the right answer is. The right answer is probably somewhere in the middle, and unfortunately, the middle doesn't exist. You know, there is no balance. The middle is probably like alchemy. You know, the blending of science and belief. You know, that no two people could ever agree on. But yeah, I think, you know, I would never tell someone how to do this or not do this. I don't know. I don't know what gets results. For me, the most interesting evidence always is the personal accounts, the personal experience. If I go into the Lizzie Borden house and I hear voices and footsteps right above me and run upstairs and find no one there, you know, it forces me to say, well, you know, maybe that wasn't a ghost. I accept that. But damn, I don't know what it was at 11 o'clock at night, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, no two ghost hunters are alike. That's certainly one thing I found.
Yeah. Also, sort of on the infighting feud, and you kind of touched on this, how one group begets two, begets four. It is pretty bad, that interdisciplinary squabbling in the ghost hunting field. It seems like, well, for starters, the one of the things I'm down on, I guess you could say, about ghost hunting is kind of like how we made the joke about the Podunk Ghost Patrol. It
right.
Seems like, you know, if you want to be a ghost hunter, all you got to do is first you need, you know, a name, then a logo, and
right.
Then a website and T-shirts and stuff, and then an EMF reader, and, you know, then next thing you know, you're going to places and stuff. There's, like, TAPS, and they have their own sort of, like, little network, if you will, of groups and stuff like that. Then there's just so many, there's an alphabet soup of of little minor league ghost hunting groups, and some groups that consist of two people,
right,
and aren't really a group. Although I count your one person group as a group.
Thanks, so, I appreciate that.
I'll endorse it.
I appreciate it.
But like, I guess just talk a little bit about that landscape of ghost hunting groups and how it seems like. Some of them work together, some of them feud. It's bizarre, but also fun to watch.
It's fun for me to watch. Where I think Lloyd Auerbach, who's a parapsychologist in California, he was telling me recently that he's been talking to some groups in the Seattle, Tacoma, Washington area, mm-hmm. and this is just a case study for you. They counted 42 paranormal investigative teams in and around Seattle, Tacoma.
Wow.
42! Holy moly!
Yeah.
And so what happens is some of them get into, like, turf wars, you know, like, well, you can't go investigate that restaurant, that's our place. I don't know, if it were me and you're really interested in research, you'd say, hey, I just investigated that restaurant, can you go in now and see what you find?
Yeah.
And then when you're done, let's send in another group, and then let's all talk, you know, separately and together. You're right. One of the problems is the ghost hunting groups, I would argue, tell me if you agree or disagree, because I don't know the UFO people as much, but would you guess there's a lot more people out there doing amateur ghost research than UFO?
Right now? Absolutely.
Yeah, and I that's my thought too. But we're not nearly as organized as the UFO people. We don't have MUFON. You know, we don't have a ghost equivalent.
Yeah.
Where people, you know, have some form of, you know, centralized repository that most people can pretty much agree on.
Yeah, I think the Taps family thing is sort of I feel like they're kind of trying to form their own sort of MUFON of ghosts.
Right.
But I don't know if that's successful or not.
But the problem with that is that you still have one kingpin group, mm-hmm. and the kingpin group is the group with the TV show.
Yeah.
You know, whereas MUFON doesn't strike, you know, I think for it to really work, it would have to be led by someone like the Ryan Institute or the Parapsychology Foundation, something that's just like this neutral, academic, centralized group that no one can argue about. You know, ghost hunters all over the world can argue with each other about turf and all that other stuff, but you kind of can't argue with what the Ryan Institute has done, you know, mm-hmm. that used to be attached to Duke University and all their studies into this. If they were to centralize it, you know, you're either on board with academia or you're not. And I think that's for there truly to be a good network, that's where it would have to start. The Taps guys, I think that network started more out of necessity. You know, they're so popular, they've got the television shows, they're getting hundreds and hundreds of emails a week asking for people to come look at their haunted house that they just, you know, the only way to do it was to set up a network.
And the other sort of big picture area I want to talk about with you is something that you definitely have a ton of perspective on, and that's sort of the online world of paranormal studies. And as we've talked about already, ghostvillage.com is insanely popular.
Mm-hmm.
And like you pointed out, it started out as just 6 pages, which is kind of that's a little bit how Banal of America started. Now we've gotten just to the ball starts rolling. Talk a little bit, I guess, for starters, about the evolution of ghostvillage.com from just 6 pages to what it is now.
Yeah, well, it's like I said, back in 99, I said, hey, tell us about your own ghost experiences. And, you know, back then we'd get like 8-10 hits a day, you know, and maybe every 4 or 5 weeks someone would send in an experience, and I would publish it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more that I published, the more they started coming in, and I started to realize that people were reading these stories and realizing, first of all, that they're not alone. There are lots of other people out there having similar experiences, and that there's something cathartic about sharing them, about getting it off your chest, saying, oh, you know, finally, here's a place where I can share this, where I won't be called crazy or laughed at. And it's also, of course, somewhat anonymous. You know, I mean, it's the internet. They don't have to give their full name or picture or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a big part of it. And then, you know, we started reviewing books, we started interviewing people, and then finally other writers started contributing stories regularly. We put up the message board, which has just shy of 20,000 members now. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's just, it went from, you know, 6 hits a day to, you know, in the neighborhood of 200,000 hits a day. And we've got, I think Google has something like 57,000 pages indexed on,
oh, wow,
on the site. So, and I will take all the credit for starting it, but boy, there's just hundreds and hundreds of people that contribute now that, that keep it going, because I couldn't do this alone under any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. How difficult is it to keep up with the sort of like the fast pace of change online? Like I've seen, I checked out ghostvillage.com. It's massive. I mean, it's vast, and, mm-hmm. and just to explore it would take a while. But I definitely recommend that everybody does, because it's just an outstanding ghost site. But how do you keep up with that fast pace of change? I see ghostvillage.com has sort of their own podcast series, Ghost Chronicles. You got a mm-hmm. YouTube channel, Paranormal Journeys.
Yep.
Show on YouTube. How do you keep up with that fast pace of change online?
Yeah, that's hard because I mean, I will see new websites come up. Here's the other thing too. Like, you know, we are huge, and if I want to change, fortunately, after you know being in web development for over 10 years now, not just my site but professionally too, I've learned a few things over the years, so I can incorporate new stuff better. I mean, in the old days, you wanted to add a new page, you had to update 200 files. You know?
Wow, yeah.
It's you know, one of it is just smarter design. That's certainly helped a bit. But yeah, you know, new technology isn't necessarily great. You know what I mean? You want to see what's going to work. YouTube has got a massive audience. You know, that just makes sense. People are more visual than ever before. They want to see video content. Some people are not going to be bothered to read online, but they will watch. They will listen. Podcasting, of course, is popular. So, you know, part of it is just keeping up with the competition. The other part of it is just saying, what kind of site do I want to look at? Because I guarantee you I look at the site more than anyone else, you know, being the guy that takes care of it every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, well, what would interest me to read or hear or see?
Yeah.
And those are some of the things I'm starting to seek out now. And my new thing is, like, look, I've brought this massive audience together. I can only do so much. So, like, for example, the podcast, I have nothing to do with it. I'm just the publisher of it. But I like what Ron does.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the cool thing about Ghost Village, from what I've already seen on the site and stuff, is that you've really built a great community there and fostered a great community, which is cool, especially in light of, you know, how antagonistic some other realms of the paranormal world are, that you've built a nice community there.
Yeah, well, you know, I think I don't have all the answers. No one does. And I think if you can just expose people to lots of different perspectives. I publish stuff up there all the time that I don't agree with. You know, there's someone that's written articles on, you know, why orbs really are ghosts. I don't agree with a word of it, but I think that it's important people see it, you know, and draw their own conclusions. You know, if I was sure I had the answers, I'd be on the top of the mountain somewhere preaching and starting my own church and really getting rich. but I don't. And so what I can do is just make sure that, you know, we stick to the objective of Ghost Village has never changed. It was never supposed to be just about me. It was always, you know, let's look at all sides of the issue. And I think that's what keeps people coming back to us and, you know, again and again.
Yeah, well, in a sort of business perspective kind of way, you have done an awesome job too, and something that I really respect and definitely, you know, will learn from just from the way you've done things is to build the brand of ghostvillage.com.
Right.
I guess just talk a little bit about that, sort of building the brand and the stresses that go along with that, because I've experienced that with Banal of America, you know, where there's stresses involved with building a brand that other people really wouldn't understand.
Yeah, well, this is where, you know, again, to give away a trade secret, I used to work for an ad agency, and I was a marketing director of a company before I became a full-time writer. Mm-hmm. And so I understood from the beginning, you know, I wanted a very consistent message. You know, ghostvillage.com's tagline from the start was ghost research, evidence, and discussion. Always. It's never changed. It's never changed, you know, chased anything else. The logo has been very consistent and will remain so. This is it. This is our logo. You know, it might adjust so slightly that you won't even notice it, but that's, you know, the consistency in color scheme and everything else. Fortunately, it's become such a brand, my publisher wanted to put the logo on the cover. That wasn't my request. That was theirs.
Yeah, that was cool.
And it's great because people in the bookstore might pick it up and not buy the book, but they might go back and check out the website. You know, fortunately, I do a ton of media. I do television and I do radio and podcasts. And what's nice about the website is it's free. You know, if you want to just dip your toe in, if you're not ready to buy my book just yet, if you're not ready to, you know, whatever, you know, jump in just yet. GhostVillage.com is free. You can go there when it's convenient for you 24/7, and you can check it out. You can learn from it. You can contribute. And I think that's the beauty of it, is it's just consistency is critical if you're going to build something that's going to last. You know, you can't go chasing different dreams or ideas. You can't change the way you do things. And number one, you can't be an egomaniac and say, well, I'm the ghost guru. This is how it works. No other opinions welcome. Because I've seen those websites. They get popular and then they go away pretty quickly as soon as too many people have a beef with the kingpin involved.
Yeah.
And I've got such a great team of moderators that run my message board. I absolutely couldn't do it without them. I've got great contributors that are always bringing in new material, and it's just grown. It's grown on its own inertia now, which is awesome. I mean, from a perspective, it's so much easier to run now than it used to be because I've got so much to work with. I've got stories coming in every day. It's just, which one do I choose now?
Yeah, yeah, that's the good part about it. And you got to have a great staff. Like, we have an awesome staff at Banal America, and I'm sure you have a great group of people helping you run Ghost Village. So,
yeah, no, yeah, absolutely.
You can't do it alone.
Nope.
Sort of, let's talk about the world of the paranormal online, because you were in the field of the paranormal before the online explosion, I presume.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen it explode online, not just you know, the podcast and the YouTube stuff, but just in general. You know, before the internet, the world of paranormal study was a completely different world in a lot of ways. I guess just talk about the evolution of online research and the paranormal world, online publication for paranormal stuff, and the pros and the cons of the online explosion.
Well, the good news is the internet it's an amazing, amazing resource. You can find things, you can research things so much faster online than you ever could before, and it's really sped up that whole process, which is great. The problem is the internet is so accessible that it's turned any wannabe into a publisher.
Yeah.
Now, I worked for newspapers and magazines before I ever got started online. I understand things like copyright law. I have proofreaders, things that, you know, good content is still important. But one of the problems that I've run into a lot is just, you know, flagrant disregard for copyright, where people will say, oh, that's a cool article, and just copy it and paste it onto their websites.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could spend all day chasing those people down saying, you know, you can't do that. It's legal. You know, you didn't ask. You just took it, and that's absolutely against the law. So that's one of the things you run into, is people absolutely lifting your content and taking it elsewhere. It's an uphill battle, and sadly, it's a losing battle. All you can try to do is just educate people a bit that, you know, the wonderful thing is, yes, you can be a web publisher. You know, you can get a website going for, what, like $20 a year now? You can have some space and a name and everything, you know, if you want to do it on the cheap. But you still have a responsibility. If you're going to be good, if you're going to get bigger and have people want to come back, you have to offer something that no one else offers, and that's original content presented in a good way. So, again, there's a reason that there are a few websites that people go to most of the time and others that people just jump in and out of. Mm-hmm. And the reason is those people understand it. They understand that they need to have content that other people don't have, perspectives, you know, things that make people want to come back to those websites. And that's true in any field. Doesn't matter if it's ghosts or widgets or cars or guitars or anything else.
Yeah.
So the good news is there's a reason that some websites become the best known and most popular, and there's a reason that, lots of lawsuits go around.
Exactly, yeah. And another downside, I guess you could say, to the online esoteric world is just the proliferation of hoaxes and that kind of thing. It does slow, it sort of adds a lot of gum to the works, if you will. Just in general, it's sort of, that's one of the bad parts about it.
Absolutely, and I know how to use Photoshop as well as just about anybody. I could whip you up something, you know, very convincing. But, you know, I've never put forward a ghost photo that I said, this is it, this is proof. Even when people send me things, it's always their word. I don't endorse anything ever, ever, ever. You know, someone sends me a photo, I'm like, hey, that's interesting. I'll put it on the site. It's part of the discussion. It's not me saying, this is a ghost photo. It's me saying, you know, here's what someone claims to be a ghost photo. And then I always ask them questions. Well, you know, you got to tell me what happened surrounding this photo. Where did you take take it? What happened? What was the temperature? You know, tell us all about it. And then, you know, you can decide for yourself if this is truly evidence worth discussing or just another person out there who might be fooling themselves.
Yeah. And one of the complaints I've heard, I guess, more so in the UFO field and it's actually sort of the antithesis in the ghost field. It's just that the online world sort of hurt the personal nature of esoteric studies in the sense that, like I pointed out, you know, a lot of UFO conferences don't do too well anymore, and a lot of UFO groups are kind of winding down and not as popular as they were before. But we've kind of seen the opposite take from the ghost hunting field in that it's actually kind of helped in a lot of ways, both, you know, helped and hindered, I guess you could say, the personal nature of that in the sense that it allows people to meet and sort of find collective interests in their own areas and stuff.
You know, one of the things that kills me is the emails that we get at Ghost Village, and we get a lot of them. Like, you know, I need help. You know, can you come to my house? I live in Alaska. You know, and you sit there and you go, oh man, you know, these people are reaching out to you, but what they don't realize is that there's lots of people reaching out to you. And I kind of made the decision years ago is that, you know, you can either help a few people a lot, or you can help a lot of people a little.
Yeah.
And that's the route I took. I want to help a lot of people a little. It's all I can do. You know, I put forth everything I have. It's either in my books or on my websites. I don't hold anything back. There's no secrets, you know. In interviews or whatever, you can ask me anything. I won't ever answer with read the book, you know.
Yeah.
Which is so obnoxious. But, so it's all out there. But what I can't do is come to your house in Alaska or Texas and sometimes not even in the next town over. I can't, because I wouldn't have the time to do it any justice. Mm-hmm. And so what I can do is refer you to our message boards where there's lots of people that might be able to give you a hand. Or if I know someone in your area, you know, refer a case to you. So you're right. Sometimes it feels impersonal, even for me. Even people who are like, oh, I read your book. I have this question, or, you know, I need some help. Can you come here and check this out? And you go, God, I can't. You know, I wish I could, but it's just me. You know, it's just one person sometimes.
And you've kind of been around the online world since 99 in the paranormal online world. Apparently, mm-hmm. I believe you've probably been doing a lot of online stuff before that. Where do you see the online world going, especially with regards to paranormal research? I mean, when you started Ghost Village in 99, people were just sort of hearing about MP3s.
Right.
The idea of being able to put together a radio show like we're doing now was something that was, you know, maybe being talked about but wasn't being done. And, you know, YouTube just came out of nowhere, like, during the aughts here, sometime after 2001 or so, and that just exploded. Where do you see the online world going, especially with regards to paranormal stuff?
Yeah, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot more interactive video and audio coming up, because that's getting easier to do and more accessible, like you said, like with YouTube and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The Paranormal Journey Show is a show I started filming for my local cable access. You know, that's where it gets seen by almost 7 people. But then I put it on YouTube and on Ghost Village, and it gets seen by thousands. Mm-hmm. And so it's pretty cool. We use good TV studios to put the stuff together, and then I just got to get better at getting the digital files up to YouTube. So, you know, I think what you're going to see is more of that stuff. You're going to see streaming investigations, like, hey, you know, this weekend we're here in Alaska, and we're going to be going on an investigation, and we're going to set up webcams, and you can type us questions, and you can partake in these things. Because one of the things that's happened is, first of all, I mean, I don't know how other people feel, but TV really is horrible. You know, there's so much junk on.
Yeah.
And with the writer's strike, that's only making it worse. You know, the networks, I read an article last spring that said in a one-year period, the 4 major television networks lost 1 million viewers.
Oh, wow.
And they're all scratching their heads going, well, what happened? Did they go to, like, you know, the specialized cable channels, or did they start reading again or whatever? The reality is everything is eating away at network television. Some people are spending a lot more time on the internet where 10 years ago they would have just been plopped down in front of the television.
Yeah.
You know, they're becoming their own program directors on the internet. And so if you're going to stay innovative, you're going to have to offer content that they want to see. And I think that's, you know, that's something that I would love to start hosting on Ghost Village one day. I'd love to see, you know, groups that can take very limited equipment that's easily accessible and stream it as they're doing an investigation somewhere for the whole world to see.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what's next.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess the other big picture, sort of final big picture question would be really, you know, the EVP thing kind of came along in the last, you know, let's say, you know, in the last 7 years or so. I mean, that's a rough estimate. And you'd kind of think that that would be a good tide turner for the skeptics, not the zealous skeptics, but, you know, the open-minded skeptics. But it kind of, that's kind of also, the bloom is kind of off the EVP rose now because everyone's doing it. What do you think, will anything be good enough, I guess, for the skeptics, short of them dying so they can see for themselves what happens? Will anything be good enough? Do you think that, where do you see ghost hunting going as far as evidence collection, that sort of thing? Because, you know, EVP, all of a sudden it was like, wow, this EVP thing is great, and now everybody's doing it. Where do you see the next thing going as far as tangible evidence goes?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. EVP, well, of course, it started in the 1950s, but you're right, it did get a lot more popular just in the last, you know, half decade or so. It just exploded, and yeah, you're right. You know, for some people, no evidence is going to be enough. And that's one of the things you run into where you're like, you start to say, like, well, wait a minute. At what point are you just operating under a belief system and cease being a true skeptic?
Yeah.
You know, or you just say, like, I don't believe in this, therefore anything you show me can't be real. You know, one of the examples I like to use is what about those pieces of paper in your pocket? Why on earth is the 20 worth more than the 1?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, they're the same size, the same color, roughly the same design, same weight. You know, Washington was the first president. Andrew Jackson was actually impeached. You know, why is he worth more than Washington? And the reason is because it's a faith. It's a belief system. We collectively agree the 20 is worth a pizza and a six pack, and the 1 won't even get you a cup of coffee. You know, and that's one of the things we collectively agree on. The problem is that when it comes to belief, we can't collectively agree on anything. So no matter what you put forward, I don't think it'll ever convince some skeptics because they're simply operating under a belief system. As far as, like, the next evidence goes, you know, you're seeing a lot more investigators with better and better video equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Infrared. Some of them are really ponying up the thousands of dollars it takes to get a thermal imaging camera and stuff like that. And I think, you know, you'll see more of that stuff as it gets less expensive and more accessible.
And you seem to be pretty up to date, I guess you could say, or you know, you're following the new science area in general. You know, all the sort of alternative dimension, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we're headed in a direction where there's a chance maybe that area of science will not necessarily solve the ghost problem or the ghost enigma on its own, but maybe we'll unlock some element to the ghost thing, probably by accident?
Yeah, I think what's happening is you'd have to put a quantum physicist, a psychologist, a scientist, a ghost hunter, a priest, a rabbi, you know, and I guess, you know, some...
And you.
And me. All in the same room and say, listen, let's all talk about what we know. And realize that there's a lot more overlap here than we ever considered before.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things. The problem is that mainstream science, whenever it gets into the paranormal, they throw their hands up saying, whoa, I'll lose my grant, you know, if I start talking about this stuff. And so they're forced to ignore it instead of just following the road wherever it may lead. Same with psychologists. My sister's a psychologist. She's a doctor, PhD. And I've asked her, I said, forget for a minute if ghosts are real or not real. They're perceived as real by millions of people the world over. As someone who studies the human animal, wouldn't you want to know more about that? And she looked at me and she's like, man, if we start talking about ghosts, it'll set us back 100 years. We'll be head shrinkers again and, you know, the same stigmas we dealt with back when, you know, Freud was around.
Yeah.
Whereas now we actually made some headways becoming like a legitimate science. And I said, hey, you're absolutely right. It's a very practical answer. And she's like, yeah, and you're right. You know, people perceive these things as real, and we should be asking questions about that. You know, what is your ghost? You know, maybe even if you have to put it in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And but those are some of the issues we're dealing with, is that it is still weird, and psychology doesn't want to touch it. Science can't touch it. And so it's left to the masses like us.
Yeah. So what's coming up on the horizon for you? Let me run down your dates that are coming up here. You got some speaking engagements. Volcano, California, you're going to be there for Ghost Rush 2008, March 28th to the 30th. Cape Cod Community College, you're going to be speaking there in West Barnstable, Mass. On May 30th. You'll be at the Mass Monster Mash. I'll be there too, so I'll see you there.
Great.
In October in Watertown, Mass. What other stuff do you have coming up on the horizon? New books, any speaking engagements that I didn't hit on, any media appearances you want to mention, anything like that? Let's hear it.
Yeah, no, I've got I'm booking up throughout the year for more lectures and things like that, which is always fun to do. You can always go to ghostvillage.com to check out what the latest is. And I've got two books coming out this year, Weird Massachusetts, which you mentioned earlier, and I do apologize about the photo shoot, but I thought really you'd be perfect for it. And the second book is my first book for children, actually. It's called Who's Haunting the White House? And it's a nonfiction book for children. We're using ghosts as kind of an innovative way to teach history. So I'm excited about that. That'll be out in September.
Awesome. Awesome. That sounds cool. And with the explosion here in paranormal TV, we haven't seen you. Obviously, you've done TV appearances and everything, but no spinoff Ghost Village TV show on the horizon or anything like that yet.
You know, it's funny. I've in the last, 5 months, I've spoken with almost, a different production company per month.
Wow.
And they're certainly hot on the – but, you know, that doesn't mean anything. Don't be impressed. Really. I mean, it means nothing more than I took time out of my day on the phone. Certainly they're still interested in producing new shows, and they're looking to talk to different people who do this stuff. And I don't know if I'm right for television or not. I guess you know, who knows? Who knows? You know, you never know. But at the end of the day, I just want to keep doing what I love, and that's writing and researching and talking about this subject. And if that leads to TV, that's fine. And if it doesn't, that's probably even better.
Nice, nice. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been great talking to you. You have a great insight into the ghost field. Like I said, you're a superstar in the field, so your point of view has a lot more weight than you know, the head of the Podunk Ghost Patrol. So I was glad I could have you here on the show as I delve into the ghost world here on Banal America Audio. Yeah, really open-minded point of view. I like the way you look at all the different things, and you're willing to say, you know, well, this guy might be wrong. We may not know. You know, I like that. I don't like people who come on and you know, say they know for sure, which is always a disappointment to have someone on who has all the answers, because then there's not much left to talk about.
Right.
And it was really great to have you on the show. I had a chance to meet you at the Mass Monster Mash. Very cool guy. Easygoing, not an egomaniac like some of the other people in the paranormal field, so that's always a plus. Yeah, like I said, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. The book is The Ghost Files. It's from New Page Books. You can find that all over the place. And the other books, of course, are Ghosts of War, Our Haunted Lives, The Nightmare Encyclopedia, Encyclopedia of Haunted Places, Communicating with the Dead, The World's Most Haunted Places, Weird Massachusetts coming up, and, of course, coming up is the Who's Haunting the White House book, so I look forward to those books. You're a pillar of the ghost community. You've been here before the ghost fad started. You're not a Johnny-come-lately. You're a serious researcher, and you put your time into the field, so we need more people like you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it.
That does it for this week's edition of BOA Audio Season 3. Big, big, super huge thanks to Jeff Belanger for coming on the show and giving us so much time and insight into the ghost genre. You can find out more on Jeff at his immensely popular website, www.ghostvillage.com. Check it out. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio Listener Feedback. This week's letter comes from Southern Ontario, Canada, and the author is a man by the name of Randy. Here's what Randy has to say. Hi, Tim. This message originates from Southern Ontario, Canada. We, my girlfriend and I, really enjoy your show, the many interesting interviews, and especially the fact that they are so easy to access online as MP3s. I have a 90-minute commute twice a week, and I play them as an alternative to broadcast radio. A 2-hour interview generally leaves me hanging, however, wishing perhaps the drive was longer. If you ask me for a favorite show, I'd be hard-pressed to do so, but the one with Grant Cameron stands out as totally interesting, as well as stimulating and revealing. I look forward to future shows with great anticipation, Tim, and I want to once more thank you and your hardworking staff for the contribution you are making to a better understanding of the complex subject of esoterica in general, and, in particular, common elements as they relate to ufology and paranormal research. I like your style and the way you get some of the guests to, quote, lighten up a bit without drawing away from the serious content of the topics. Signed, Randy, in Southern Ontario, Canada. Thank you very much for the feedback, Randy. I appreciate it. I hope you are digging the MP3s, and they're working out well for you. I really appreciate that you mentioned the way we try to get the guests to, quote, lighten up a bit. That's definitely something that we enjoy doing here on the show. One of the positives, I think, of having a pre-taped program as opposed to some sort of live situation is that the guests really seem to cut loose a little more than maybe you'd expect them to on a live radio broadcast. It becomes more personal. It's really more of a conversation between me and the guest and less of a show. Also, I'm glad you enjoyed the Grant Cameron interview. Stick around. I'm sure Grant's going to be coming back on the show in the not-too-distant future. I actually had a chance to talk to him briefly when we taped the Steve Bassett interview because Steve was doing the interview from Grant's room at the International UFO Congress. And when I called out there, Steve hadn't shown up yet into the room, but Grant was. So we chit-chatted for a little bit, and we're talking about doing a future interview on BOA Audio sometime before the close of Season 3. So once again, big thanks to Randy in Southern Ontario, Canada, for writing in. I love the international listeners, you know that, and I count Canada as international listeners. So all you great Canadian listeners, send me an email, and you'll get in here on BOA Audio listener feedback. What if you are from Canada? What if you're from somewhere else in the world? What if you're even from America and you want to be a part of BOA Audio listener feedback? How do you do it? There's two ways. Either A, simply write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or go to banalofamerica.com, click the contact button, and fire off an email to me. No matter how you get the correspondence in my hands, it will be put into the inbox for future BOA Audio listener feedback segments. Up next, what do you think it is, my friends? Of course, it's the thanks portion of the show. I want to give huge thanks and a big shout out to the outstanding BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, R. Lee, Joe V., Tina Senna, and Rochelle Hawks. Week in, week out, top-notch reading material at banalofamerica.com. Via the great BOA staff of writers. If you're only listening to BOA Audio and you're not reading the columns at banalofamerica.com, you're only getting half the story. Read their stuff at BOA, check out their respective websites, and get to know the BOA staff. It's only a matter of time before BOA Audio, After Hours, makes its grand debut, and you're going to be hearing from this crew, and I'm really excited to bring their voices to the BOA Audio listening audience. As you've heard, we've got crazy stuff going on. We've got the spinoff show After Hours in the works. You heard an hour and a half long interview last week direct from Ireland, a two-hour interview a few weeks ago from South Africa. Next week, we're going all the way to France. You're going to be hearing about that in the preview in a little bit. The point I'm trying to make is that's three long international calls over the course of about a month. And trust me, my friends, I just got the phone bill here in the mail this weekend. And that shit adds up. And as usual, the money for that sort of thing comes out of my pocket. So now, here during the program, we turn to you and ask you to make a donation to help support BOA and to help keep the costs down so we can maintain the price of the program, which is free, for all of our great listeners and readers the world over. How do you make a donation? That's simple. You go to banalofamerica.com and click the PayPal button. No donation is too small, and all of those donations go towards fueling the BOA Starship. What else is there to say? What else is there to do? Only the preview for next week's program. We already sort of teased it, but I'm going to flesh it out now for you. We're going to be calling all the way to Paris, France, to welcome our guest, Gildas Bourdais, one of the leading names in French ufology. We'll be talking about its history and evolution. Official government-sponsored French UFO studies through the years, the Cometa Report, media coverage of UFOs in France, the attitude of the everyday French public with regards to UFOs, the recent release of French UFO files from March of 07, the state of French ufology today, and, of course, tons and tons more. Trust me, this one's going to be a fun episode. It's fascinating. You're going to learn a lot more about the global UFO phenomenon. A lot of strange differences about ufology in France that I didn't know about till I talked to Gildas. It was an eye-opening conversation for me, and hopefully it'll be an enlightening interview for you. That's Gildas Bourdais talking about French ufology next week on BOA Audio Season 3. And on that note, we close it out for another week. Thank you so much for listening, my friends. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, wishing you a stress-free week. And signing off.